Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650 here. Jamie Dodd now joined by my co-host, Canucks insider Thomas Drance, who also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Drancer has hustled over from Rogers Arena, sitting down in the nick of time here
by the
to
skin
join
of my
the
teeth.
Show.
My goodness.
What's up, buddy?
We almost had to juggle the lines.
It.
Like Rick Tockett, like Jigsaw at the whiteboard, figuring out some new combos. Exciting stuff.
Like Jigsaw at the whiteboard.
A reference everyone who doesn't listen to our show
total sense.
Understands.
If there's one thing about Jigsaw, he's always at the whiteboard.
Scheming. Figuring out his plans, setting up hidden cameras, planning elaborate traps.
Yeah, ordering all the materials online.
Yeah.
Really getting into the logistics of it. Okay. We got a lot to get into. Obviously.
I need more bear traps.
Sorry. Big stuff going on today. Big game at Rogers Arena tonight. So let's get right into the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, May 16th. The headline is a pivotal game five between the Canucks and the Oilers tonight at Rogers Arena. As I said in the opening segment, Drancer, biggest game at Rogers Arena since game seven of the Stanley Cup Finals. Here's hoping it has a slightly different outcome than that one did back in 2011, but still a massive game, right? And what I said off the top was the whole, if you told people they'd be tied 2-2, whenever, you know, in September at the start of the series, they would have been happy. That doesn't make a game four less frustrating to me. Like, that doesn't fly as an excuse for a poor performance in game four, but it does fly as a reason you should be really amped for this game.
It flies.
You know
as,
what I mean?
It flies as a coping mechanism. You know, like,
but there's a difference between looking back at game four with that reasoning,
sure,
and looking ahead to, like, okay, we've flushed game four now. That was really disappointing. They had a chance to go up 3-1. They didn't play well. They came out flat, all of those things. But there is some truth to it that, like, hey, you're in a chance to take a 3-2 series lead against the Edmonton Oilers in the second round here with a game at home. That's an incredible opportunity.
Yeah, opportunity knocks, right? And, you know, the shocking success that has been this Canucks season naturally lends itself to a sense of this team playing with house money, right? Or being a team on the rise, right? In contrast, the Edmonton Oilers, with, like, Dreisaitl becoming extension eligible on July 1, you know, I mean, as of July 2nd, right, if Dreisaitl's deal's not done as of July 1, the conversation around this Oilers team takes on, like, a last dance feel. At the very least, that's a conversation that will be had voluminously in the Edmonton market, right? So, on the one hand, there's the sense, like, pressure's on the Oilers. They were the preseason cup favorite. The Canucks are playing with house money. No one expected them to be here. If you asked a Canucks fan or a Canucks player or Rick Tockett before the series, would you take a game five with the series level 2-2? They would have said yes. All of that obscures how hard it is to keep teams together, right? The fact that you can win three trades, have Lekkerimäki break out as a star, have Tom Volander pushing, you know, and joining the team late in the season. You can replace a variety of key players in free agency, knock it out of the park again with what this team does, you know, filling out their roster. And you still aren't guaranteed anything like this opportunity again next season or the year after that, mm-hmm, or the year after that, right? These opportunities don't come along very often. This franchise has advanced to the conference final three times in the history of the franchise.
Yep.
Like, you cannot sort of ignore just how loudly opportunity knocks, like Jigsaw at the whiteboard.
And I think Rick Tockett is very aware of that, right? I think that's where his frustration stems from, is he knows exactly how difficult it is to get here. Exactly how rare those opportunities, how easy, the temptation is so easy, right? To all, especially when you're a surprise, like, hey, we're going to have this opportunity year in, year out. It doesn't play out like that. Very, very rarely plays out like that, right? So, yes, it's a great position to be in, but make the most of this opportunity. Don't just be satisfied that the opportunity is there. Make the most of it now that it's here.
Seattle Kraken made it to Game 7 against the Dallas Stars last year, right? missed the playoffs this year. Now, Dave Hackstall fired. I mean, how quickly things change in a sport as dynamic as hockey. Like, nothing. Tomorrow is guaranteed to nobody in life and to nobody in the sport of hockey.
All right. I want to bump up the lineup talk right to headlines. Or should we just...
100%.
Okay, no, yeah,
let's just,
that is the
let's
headline.
Just make it a headline. Yeah,
yeah, that's the headline today, right? Is that Rick Tocchet... partly following through on what he said after game four, right? When he was going to talk, they were going to talk about lineup changes, but also showing some second thoughts after what he had to say yesterday about not breaking up either the Miller or Lindholm lines. Fairly significant lineup shuffle, quite significant lineup shuffle
today. Massive.
At morning skate.
This is the biggest line. In fact, this is, I would say, the first major lineup shift of the postseason for a Canucks team that entered the playoffs and has really ridden with what they've had for 10 games. Right, for 10 games, the biggest changes we've seen in the lineup are like Juulsen replaces Myers, Juulsen replaces Soucy. So that's a seventh defenseman coming in as a result of suspension and injury, and occasionally
like Lafferty and Mikheyev rotating next
Sam
to Patterson.
Lafferty and Mikheyev and like Hoglander and Carlson. Like, well, and that's a big part of the motivation here, right? Pettersson's line has been a big question mark throughout, and while the Lindholm line has been established, and as Rick Tocchet described it on Wednesday in his availabilities, productive. I mean, I've been saying it the whole time. I'm watching this, and they're just not getting anything like the same types of results that they've gotten from the Garland-Joshua duo all year long, regardless of who's been their pivot, with Lindholm in the middle. And, you know, Lindholm's playing well. Like, I can't identify exactly why they haven't been tilting the ice. Matchup difficulty could be part of the story, but this Canucks team needs, if they're winning this series, they need to stem the bleeding 5-on-5. And as well as the Lindholm line was doing scoring against the grain, there were way too many shifts playing without the puck. And we know what Garland and Joshua can do when they're on the puck. You know, the Miller line stays together. Well, they've kind of been getting fed too. The Canucks need to stop getting outchanced and outshot the way they have in this series to this point at 5-on-5. And changing the lineup like this, a big tweak, exactly what the doctor ordered. This was an absolutely necessary step. There are paths for the Canucks to have not changed their lineup and still win this series. But those paths are like the Oilers get no more than three additional power plays the rest of the way, and their goaltending keeps being terrible, and Canucks shooters keep scoring on 60% of their scoring chances, you know, and they're able to grind out two more one-goal games over the next three. That's a very narrow path, Jamie. That's like a lot that has to be in your favor to barely win. The Canucks needed to like make moves to widen that path, and the possibility now. So just to get into how they're deployed, right? So Suter's staying with Miller and Besser.
Yep.
Lindholm is going to play with Pettersson on the right wing and Hoglander on the left. So that's a totally new, let's call it the second line. Blueger returns to his spot with Garland and Joshua, and Podkolzin and Philip DiGiuseppe flanking
Neil Zaman
on the fourth line. Now, Neil Zaman was not rinsed, but neither was Noah Juulsen. I do sort of wonder, because you have four centers in this lineup.
If
you were to go 11-7 in a slightly unconventional way, you could double shift a center through Miller, Lindholm, Pettersson, Blueger situationally.
Suter. Like you have options, right?
You know, like I think that's at least something worth considering, especially, but anyway, might just be the Juulsen's being held out because there's like someone who's game time on the back end. Who knows at this time of year? I asked Rick Tocchet directly 11-7 and he didn't seem moved, and Rick Tocchet tends to sort of tip his hand, you know, like he said Lafferty and Mikheyev's names during the presser yesterday. Turned out to be highly revealing. So if they're lining up this way, you know, if it's still Pettersson versus McLeod, now you've got the help of a 24 goal scorer in Hoglander and a player in Lindholm who's been hyper efficient as a finisher, who gets to sort of soft areas of the defensive zone coverage, can shoot, you know, does a lot of interesting stuff off puck, maybe can take some of the defensive pressure off of Pettersson generally. you hope that if that's the lineup, if that's the matchup against the McLeod line, that they can finally break through and do some damage, given that the Canucks have not scored a single goal in Pettersson and McLeod's head-to-head 20 minutes, 5-on-5, to this point in the series. However, also, if you're going Bluger, Garland, Joshua against the McLeod line, like, all of a sudden there's a matchup that you'd think the Canucks will soundly win.
You sure hope so, yeah.
As opposed to a matchup that, you know, the Canucks, like, haven't done enough in. And if you play Lindholm with Pettersson, can that line hold up against the Draisaitl line? My guess is we see Bluger.
That's what I would guess as well.
Go into a punt against
Draisaitl. That's what I would guess as well.
Which, by the way, let's not understate the risk there. Draisaitl has 10 points in the series.
Draisaitl's a beast.
Monster.
Bluger is a huge key to, we're going to talk about the Pettersson aspect of it, and we can get into more about him moving to the wing and the fit with Lindholm and all of that, but Bluger is such a key to even being able to try this and then also to making it work, right? Mm-hmm. Because normally if you're a team bumping up your fourth line center and it's like, okay, now you're going to play top 6 minutes and maybe even match up against Leon Draisaitl, that's like, oh boy, that's desperation. That's not a recipe for success. With Bluger and the way that Joshua and Garland with Bluger have controlled play, I think it's at least a risk worth taking.
Yes.
Risk? Yes. But I think it's 100% a risk worth taking.
Rick Tocchet is cooked here because whether or not it... No, he has.
Somebody's cooked here.
I love it.
And it's Rick Tocchet.
I love these lineup changes. I think there's at least a chance that it changes the complexion of the series. It may not work. But more than anything, I think it at the very least correctly diagnoses a couple of issues, right? In particular, Joshua and Garland need to be controlling play or this Canucks team will not control play, right? Pettersson needs more skilled line mates than two guys who've combined for 5 goals in their last 75 games, or you're cooked. This addresses both of those huge sort of burning questions in the Canucks middle six in a way that this team absolutely needed to try. Oilers figured out and hit some deficiencies with some tweaks in game four, moves. Here's Rick Tocchet's counter moves, and to me, they look sharp, which doesn't guarantee success by any means, especially against this Oilers behemoth. Mm-hmm. But it's exactly what the Canucks needed to try if they're going to just, you know, again, the club doesn't need to get to controlling play outright. You don't necessarily need to repeat game one, which, by the way, pivoted at the Draisaitl injury, right? You don't need to repeat that where you actually, like, outchance the Oilers, but you can't get outchanced by 10. Right, you can't get outshot by 10 at 5-on-5. Like, you need to be at 45, 44, 43% as opposed to 38% the way the Canucks have been throughout this series if you're going to widen that path to victory. I think these moves go a long way towards setting that up.
All right, Pettersson on the wing.
Or could, in theory.
Could, yeah. Look, as Rick Tocchet said, he's going to swing the bat. And this is swinging the bat, and I think it's a good swing. Doesn't mean sometimes you barrel the ball, right? And it goes right to a fielder. And that sucks. But this is, I think this is a good swing, a good cut
at it
from Rick Tocchet.
At the very least, it's a pitch worth swinging at. This isn't last season Bo Bichette. This is this season Bo Bichette. Okay.
Oh, don't get me started.
Yeah, no,
okay,
sorry.
Pettersson on the wing. Interesting. Now, you made the point, we were just talking very briefly before you hopped on the air before show, that we have seen Hoglander, Lindholm, and Pettersson as a trio for, I think, 50-plus minutes in the regular season this year. But, as you pointed out, that was with Pettersson at the wing. That was when the Canucks were still kind of committed to using Lindholm as a flexible piece. They could play either down the middle or on the wing. Tocchet since then has kind of said, no, I see Lindholm as a center, so no surprise that he ends up centering this line. And I think also part of it is just giving Pettersson something different, right? Giving him a different look, putting him in a different spot, trying to change things up as much as you can with Elias Pettersson, maybe reduce that defensive workload, that mental responsibility a little bit as well. But what's your kind of reaction to that aspect of it, specifically moving Pettersson to the wing in a formation, as you said, that we haven't actually technically seen yet?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't. You know, like, everyone's like, what's wrong with the Lotto line? Why doesn't it get the same results? And it's like, well, it's not the same line that it used to be because one guy who used to play the wing now plays center. And people yelled at me for it because they thought I was being negative. Whatever, I wasn't. The fact is that this trio has played together. They've spent about 50-ish minutes together over the course of the regular season, but they did so with Lindholm on the wing and Pettersson in the middle. So this is really a new thing that we're kind of seeing for the first time here. And, you know, we'll see if it works. It's obviously a high leverage spot. These are, you know, three players with, especially in Pettersson and Lindholm's case, like a high level of hockey IQ. In Hoglander's case, the ability to be sticky on the wall, to provide some offense, to provide some sort of spark plug creativity and win a ton of battles supporting the cycle. So you know, it makes sense in your mind's eye, but it's definitely something new and, you know, something that I don't think the Canucks had a ton of opportunity to experiment with, in part because of Lindholm missing
injury.
The time he did
yep.
toward the end of the year, which is too bad. You would have, you know, the Canucks did a lot to sort of try new pairs and make guys comfortable before settling on this playoff lineup in sort of the last little bit of the regular season. This wasn't one of the combos that they were able to try, in part because I think by the time they understood the benefits and the limitations of the Lindholm fit, you know, he was hurt.
Yeah.
And they couldn't keep sort of running things through. So I think the most interesting part of this, though, is the idea that Pettersson is energized following sort of meetings and conversations between him and Rick Tocchet,
mm-hmm.
that they watched video together, and that getting Pettersson better line mates to play with, like, yes, was Tocchet's very straightforward answer when asked if this was a primary motivation of these changes. Tocchet added, we watch video together. He's energized. That's my job. I've got to help the kid out too. And, you know, I noted, like, a lot of eyebrows furrowed around the league when Tocchet was critical of Pettersson's performance in the wake of a game in which he'd been
started with Lafferty and McCabe,
yeah.
who are both out of the lineup now.
Right.
Like, that says it all. Really.
Well, and both played fewer than 10 minutes. Lafferty yep. played 7 minutes. I mean, there were a lot of people who wondered if that was, like, I don't want to go as far as to say unfair, but certainly something that would cause internal conversation. You know, you know how it works in hockey. Everyone around the league knows mm-hmm. how it works in hockey. All eyes are trained on this series. When a star player is struggling to the extent that Pettersson is, it causes a lot of interest, right? Especially in the wake of the big contract and on, right? And this was one that, you know, literally, like, people around the league were just reaching out to me and being like, well, what's that? What's going on? So I'm not shocked that the next day, you know, Pettersson, in a mostly elusive press conference or of media availability, the only thing he expanded on really was, do you need more help from your line mates? And then Tocchet came back and sort of effectively echoed that. And then we see a lineup change. And so at the very least, it seems that whatever was said post-game after game four stimulated some productive and constructive conversation, which is a very good sign. Because again, when Tocchet calls out his team, it's worked every time.
Mm-hmm.
But there is risk that you take on as a leader when you do so.
But part of, and I know I heard Halford and Brough talking about this, and you know the line of like, oh, you can't call out the team too much. You're going to lose them, right? Like, look at guys like Tortorella or Daryl Sutter. But with Rick Tocchet, you always have the sense that he's putting in the work behind the scenes with the players to build the relationships, to make it not risk-free, because it's never risk-free,
yeah.
right? But much more safely. And I think this is an example of that, right? It's like, yeah, I'm going to be direct with your criticism, but I'm also going to put in the work, listen to what your concerns are, and try to address them and put you in the best position to succeed.
Yeah, I don't
right?
know.
Like, I think the two go hand-in-hand with Rick Tocchet.
I mean, you know, Tocchet's definitely had some, has locked horns with a variety of his former players, right? So While you know, point taken, it's clear that his feel has been great for this group.
Mm.
You know, the risk I don't think is necessarily minimized. Certainly, it's not minimized entirely.
It's not zero.
By Tocchet's personality.
It's not zero, but yeah. I think he goes about it in a way consciously to try to reduce the risk. Again, you're never going to get it to zero. Like, there's always the concern for clashes between players and
yep.
coaches, right? But I think like that's part of Tocchet's strength as a coach, is managing those relationships so he can go to that well when he needs to, right?
For sure.
Anyways.
I also do think, like, you know, the commentary in Philly, right? You know, there was a sense, I think, from him that, like, he doesn't regret it, but he definitely, like, laid into them really hard and felt like he needed to adjust for a few days afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I think there's a pretty keen understanding of the risks taken, you know, beyond the work done behind the scenes to make it palatable to the players. I think he's also just aware and sometimes, like, pretty self-aware, I think, about, okay, well, I blasted them there.
Yep.
I need to probably build them up. And that might be part of what you're seeing with Pettersson too, right? Where he gets blasted, but then there's an actual tweak to put him in a more advantageous position and apparently some work done behind the scenes to watch video and try and put Pettersson in a better opportunity to succeed here. Yeah, good to see, but for all that the club has reacted so well to Tocchet's gambit all year long, and that he's got elicited the desired response each time, like, chips are down now. This is the one that matters, right? This is the one that we'll remember. So incumbent on this club to come out and play a lot more like they did in game one than they have in the three games since.
Come out and, like the coach, take some swings. Go down swinging if you're going to go down in this one. Okay, a story we should hit in the broadsheet here, even 100%. Though it's not directly related to game five tonight, but Rick Dhaliwal, our pal from Donnie and Dolly, reporting today on the show that, in his words, the Canucks may have fired Abbotsford head coach Jeremy Colliton. Now, I also saw the tweet that you retweeted from Patrick Johnson at Post Media, who says team spokesperson says a contract offer has been made to Jeremy Colliton. So read into that what you will.
Well, will do, Patrick. Thank you.
Thank you for the invitation.
I think otherwise
I wouldn't have said anything about it.
I think you can square both of these items, right? Which is that, Dhaliwal's reporting is basically that there are rumblings that he can't confirm that Jeremy Colliton has been fired over the last 2-3 days and that the Canucks may go in a different direction. Now a team official is saying a contract offer has been made to Jeremy Colliton. That's not a denial. That's context, right? Mm. So this is one of those two things may be true. The club may have decided to go in a different direction, and certainly there are some intriguing dismissals in the Pittsburgh organization with some coaches who may have longstanding relationships with a variety of personnel within the Canucks hockey operations hierarchy, and yet the club may still be high enough on Colliton to try and keep him around, whether that's like an assistant coach job at the NHL level, whether that's a player development role, what have you. Now, Colliton's had opportunities to work on an NHL bench as an assistant coach, but this is a guy who like broke in as a head coach in the SHL, was a head coach in the AHL, was a head coach in the NHL, was a head coach in the AHL in Abbotsford. Like, there are certain guys whose skill sets, talents, passions are not to like run a power play and contribute to a coaching staff, but are to be, you know, the coach as CEO, the guy in charge of it all. And like, honestly, Travis Green's one of those, right? Where it's like, there's often jobs for these guys to go like run the defense or run the power play for a different team. And he did accept an associate coach's job. But for the most part, some guys want to be head coaches and some guys just want to coach, right? Colliton's always struck me as a guy who is a head coach. And so it'll be interesting to see how this one plays out. I have no information. I've sort of been working to confirm it one way or the other. The team has effectively confirmed it by saying that a contract offer has been made to Jeremy Colliton, as opposed to like an outright denial of the report. So, we'll see where this plays out. It's just so strange, given how frequently Jeremy Colliton's work has been like praised.
Yes. Well, even as recently as game three, when it's like, I put Linus Karlsson in because of the recommendations from the Abbotsford staff.
Right. Well, and now you've got Niels Amon, Vasily Podkolzin, Nils Höglander all playing tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least slated to play tonight. I mean, those are three guys who, Artur Sylovs. Those are four guys who marinated, developed significantly in Abbotsford, and the organization has spent all year.
Noah Juulsen played 49 games there last year.
Heck yeah, he did. So 4.5, because we don't know if Juulsen's going to play. But I guess 4, because the other, if he plays, it's going to be for Niels Amon. Anyway, there's a variety of key contributors to this club's depth, who have come through Abbotsford and seemed to develop at a high level, a far higher level than this organization is usually managed. I'd add this, Colliton has made the playoffs in both of his seasons as Abbotsford head coach, and he's done so, especially this year, with a younger lineup, like a cost-effective lineup, as opposed to the sort of star-studded, highly expensive, veteran-laden lineup that Abbotsford iced in their very first season of existence when they sort of lost in the play-in, or the AHL version of the play-in. They defeated like a highly favored Colorado Eagles team in the first round this year. They hosted playoff games in Abbotsford for a second consecutive season, playoff games. So, you know, this one is mystifying to me, just given that Colliton's always been super highly thought of. Like, I can tell you 3 months ago, Colliton was so highly thought of that, you know, I think in the organization's eyes anyway, like, obviously they're over the moon about Rick Tocchet, but like, Colliton would have been like a guy in waiting for down the line. So I don't know what switched over a 12-week period in which the club punched above their weight in the postseason, and a variety of players who spent time there came up into the NHL lineup and performed well as depth pieces. This is just a strange one.
It was a big surprise to me. I mean, we've talked to Colliton a lot this year, right? Like, I've never heard anything negative about the job he's doing. It seems to be rave reviews. Now, obviously, that puts him in a good negotiating position as well. And if he's looking for different opportunities, who knows what's going on here? But that's the report from Rick Dhaliwal. The follow-up from PJ that a team spokesperson says a contract offer has been made to Jeremy Colliton. So we'll see if anything comes out about this one. But that's the latest on Jeremy Colliton. Currently, for now at least, the head coach of the Abbotsford Canucks.
Let's just quickly note before we get to the gambling odds that Knobloch says the Oilers will have the same lineup as Game 4 and Pickard starts a second straight game.
All right, gambling update for us. Or did you want me to say something else while you look it up?
No, that's fine. I'm sure I'll figure it out. maybe rag the puck to me. No, I'm kidding. The Canucks are home underdogs. They're the Oilers are favored on the road, as they've been favored in literally every single game of this series. That's just been the price. Tonight they are +120. The Canucks are +120 underdogs at home ice, on home ice, and the Oilers are -145. That's about a 42% implied probability swing there. Over-under set at 6.5 with more steam on the under. I like the over in this game, man, based on how hot the Canucks are. Now, I suppose the case for the under would be that the Oilers maybe hit a new level defensively in Game 4, and maybe they figured something out about how they have to play.
The Nurse CC pairing
team
is no more.
Right. And no Stuart Skinner.
Yep.
But I don't know. Most of these games, there's been a lot of space in neutral ice. They've been played at a high pace, and the Oilers are getting 25-plus scoring chances every game. Like, I don't know. Plus money on the over seems appealing to me. Puck line. Canucks are +1.5 at -207. So Oilers +171 to win by more than a goal. No game has been decided in this series yet by more than a goal. So in terms of the actual final scoreline. So worth considering those if you want to place a bet but don't have the fortitude to bet the money line.
If you want to place a bet but you're a coward.
Yeah.
All right.
If you want to,
what a parting shot there to close up the whiteboard.
If you're a wuss, if you love capitulation as much as I do,
all right, bet
the puck line.
That is the whiteboard for today, May 16th, playoff game day. Lots more to come. We'll hear from Rick Tocchet, and we'll take your text as well. Your reaction to the new look lineup that the Canucks are going to send out there in Game 5 against the Edmonton Oilers. Lots more coming up throughout the course of the show. Today, also, 40% of Canadians 45 plus fear becoming a burden to their families, but firmly want to age in place. Personal support workers are here to help. In recognition of PSW Day on May 19th, Home Equity Bank is celebrating the vital support home healthcare professionals provide to Canadians 55 and better with their annual Home Care Heroes Award. Home Equity Bank's CHIP Health product can help you access your home equity to afford home care and stay in the home you love. Visit CHIP.ca to learn more. More Canucks talk coming up here on the other side. Sportsnet 650.